Thanks to everyone that's helped, that's read, helped us open the meeting. Welcome again to those that have joined us since we first started. Okay, guys, we have a speaker tonight, and it falls on me to introduce them. And I'm never quite sure where to begin. This individual came into my life maybe over a decade ago and has become a really important part of my journey. And I'm incredibly grateful for the work and effort that he's put into our platform and helping me in my recovery. So I'm not going to belabor it too much. I'm very grateful to have this man in my life. And he's having a major milestone of recovery today. So I'm just going to hand you over to Jay, who's going to share his experience, strength and hope with us for 45 minutes. So, Jay, the floor is yours, my friend. Please jump in and share with us.
I'm an addict. My name is Jay.
Hi, Jay.
Hi, Jay.
Hi, Jay.
Hi, Jay.
I want to thank everybody. Before I get started, I want to thank everybody who's here. Higna has been a part of my recovery for the last 11 years. I came upon this meeting. And it started a journey for me that hasn't stopped yet and continues to expand and grow as time goes on. And the people in this room are very important to me, each and every one of you. We are told to share our experience, strength, and hope. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on my addiction. We all know how we got here. We all got here because we did too many drugs too often for probably too long. At least that's my story. I didn't care what it was, as long as it changed my mood, my mind, and how I felt about anything and everything, I was into it. Yes, I did have drugs that I like better than others, but it didn't matter in the end. As long as it changed how I felt, I would do it. I thought I was very successful at being a drug addict. I wasn't. I thought nobody knew that I was using drugs. I didn't realize that there was a neon sign or a tattoo on my forehead that said addict before I got to these rooms, but there was. In fact, my mother sat me down one day and said, "You're not allowed to go to the local hospital unless you're dying." And she told me so much for what I thought was me keeping it together. I wound up in a treatment center around the middle of December, 1980. I lied to my mother. The reason I was going to that treatment center was to fix the situations that I was in, because I was being thrown out of the house I was living in. I was being thrown out of my family's life. I was being told that if I didn't do something, that they were going to give me X, Y, Z, and they never wanted to see me again. I didn't want that to happen because I wouldn't be able to do the things I wanted to do, which was to get high. So I went to that treatment center, but I had lied to my parents about when I stopped using. I hadn't stopped. I knew exactly how long I would have from the time I left where we were living or where I was living to the treatment center, and how long it would be until I needed to do something before I'd be getting sick. The problem became is my mom sat through my intake. I don't know why they allowed her to do that, but they did. I continued to lie. And then after my mom had left, I tried to tell them, well, I used a couple hours ago and I'm going to need some help because I'm going to start getting sick here in a bit. I mean, I know what life is all about. And they let me go a little bit. They wanted to see what was real. And you know, I started to get a little sick. And they took care of me. They decided they were going to detox me. And I sit and listen today to people talking about detoxing. They put me on 150 milligrams of methadone the day I walked into that treatment center. They took me down 10 milligrams a day for the next 15 days. I was done. Had I detoxed? Probably not. But you know, the reality of it is I had gone stretches where I didn't have the drugs that I wanted to do, and you just don't feel right. Other drugs don't take care of that, and you deal with what you have to deal with. It took me another couple of weeks to start feeling right, being able to sleep, not being out of my mind. But once it was done, it was done. And so I don't understand why it takes forever and why people want to deal with that stuff. I didn't like what they were giving me when they gave it to me. It wasn't what I thought it was supposed to be. I just didn't like it. I had never done that before. So I met somebody in that treatment center. And when I went to that treatment center, I was one of a couple, maybe three addicts, if I remember right, two or three. Everybody else on that unit was there for alcohol. Drug addicts were a pretty new thing at that time, at least where I was. And there was no Narcotics Anonymous, but the person that I met had gone through this treatment center, and he was another addict. And he had 6 months clean, and I didn't know this at the beginning, but I knew he went through the same treatment center I did. I didn't know that his sponsor was the counselor that I was dealing with, and that he had stayed in the area. And he was older. And I remember everybody was older. I was one of the youngest people in that treatment center at that point. And I remember my counselor telling me she had 25 years clean. And I just looked at her like she had six heads. Number one, I had no intention of staying clean. I was there for other reasons. Number two, I wasn't going to stay clean 25 years. I wasn't 21 years old. It didn't make any sense. I mean, I was there to get the drugs working again because they hadn't worked in years. I didn't get high anymore. I got normal. I couldn't function. I mean, it wasn't about getting high. And I wanted to get high again. So all my intentions and a power greater than myself that I didn't understand was working in my life, was working. And I met this individual. And he spent a lot of time with me. I remember my first New Year's Eve, sitting there talking to him on the unit floor. and discussing things. And I wasn't in the best of shape, but I was not using, and I was not getting anything to detox at that point. And life started to shift, and I didn't understand it was shifting, but it was. I mean, I look back on my recovery, and there's a lot of things that happened that I really can't explain happening and how they happened, but they did happen, and they probably kept me here. And on not using, because that's what we count. We don't count recovery, we count abstinence from drugs. You can't count recovery. There's no way to, I can't tell you I've been in recovery for 43 years. I've been clean for 43 years. I have not picked up a drug and put it in my body, but I can't say I've been in recovery for 43 years, working steps or anything else. I have been clean for 43 years. And what I've learned and what I saw in hindsight, what I've seen happen is that when I've gotten into places I shouldn't be, doing things and thinking things that I shouldn't be doing and thinking, something or someone has intervened and kept me from jumping off the cliff or falling off the edge or whatever. I don't know how that works. I just know it works. I don't question it anymore. When I got to these rooms, I didn't believe in anything. And it took me a long time to believe in something other than what my sponsor told me in the beginning. Believe in the program. Because the nameless, faceless people, not people you know, the program, the fellowship, is doing something that you can't do. They're staying clean. And this is before I hit Narcotics Anonymous. There was no Narcotics Anonymous where I got clean and when I got clean. I didn't find my first NA meeting until I had a year. Right around this time, my first year. And I'll get back to that. That I could live with. When my sponsor told me that. And I started to think that maybe if he could stay clean, because he had a hot 6 months, and that's what I needed to see. I needed to see somebody that used like me, sounded like me, did the same kind of drugs that I did, hadn't used in 6 months. Shit, that was a long time. And if he could do it, maybe, just maybe, I could give it a shot and see if I could do it. Maybe the drugs would work even better because I hadn't used in 6 months. I mean, in the back of my head's always turning. Didn't understand that at that point, but it's like, okay. So when they told me not to go home, because that's what they told me to do. I did a 30-day program in 60 days. I'm a little slow. And they told me not to go home. They said, stay here in the area. Go to this place. It was a boarding house for drunks. I didn't last 30 days there. I wonder why. I did what they said. And for the first time in my life, I really did it somebody else's way, not my way. And when they threw me out of the boarding house, I was going home. The only problem that I had is when I was heading out of town, I stopped at my sponsor's house because his house was on the way out of town or on the way back to the interstate to go home. And I was, I'm going to say goodbye, see you later. They threw me out, blah, 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 blah. I'll call you. Thank you for everything. Have a nice life. And that conversation didn't go that way. And he said, you're not going anyplace. You're going to stay on the couch until we find your place to live. And for the second time in my life, I listened to somebody else and didn't go home. And I found a place to live. And it was a campground in the middle of the woods. Cost me $45 a month for lot rent, which is included electricity and water. And my closest neighbor, when I moved in the middle of, at the end of the winter, as I moved in the end, snow was still on the ground. This is that lower Vermont, and snow was still on the ground. My closest neighbor, which was about 150 feet, 200 feet, was somebody in the program. So, and my sponsor moved in a couple of months later, bought himself a trailer, little Airstream, and moved in. And we had a little community. And we would sit and drink coffee and discuss program every day. We went to the meetings we needed to go to. We read the literature. My sponsor had me working steps. He didn't give me a choice. He didn't say, oh, we're going, what do you think about working step one or working step two? It was like, had worked step one before I got out of the treatment center. It started step two. Then step three, and when I got out of the treatment center and was living in that campground, did my first step four. And he didn't say, you're going to write forever. He said, this is what I want you to do. Write your life story. I will see you in 30 days to do step five. Have it done. I was like, okay, that's what I got to do. That's what I got to do. And I wrote every day. And at the end of 30 days, we did my step five. And that took a couple of days. Over a couple of days, we did it in different places. There was a swimming hole a couple of miles away. We did part of it there. I mean, he didn't have to work. I wasn't really working at the time. And then it was on to step six, and then step seven. And it was looking at the book, reading the step, because I had three books. I had the big book, I had the step book, and I had the Just, not the Just for Today, but the other version of the Just for Today in the other program from Hazleton. And I had another book about the history of that fellowship as told by one of its founders. I'm a big history buff. And that's what my sponsor did with me. He worked steps. We were friends, but we worked steps. And we were close, but we worked steps, and we didn't do things. There wasn't, and I still don't believe today that answering questions in a flat book is working steps. Sitting and talking about steps and doing things, we didn't write every step. It wasn't about writing steps. I mean, there's steps that you write. Fourth step. It's a writing step. Fifth step isn't. That's a talking step. Sixth step, writing step. Seventh step, not really. Eighth step, writing step. Ninth step, not writing step. unless you're writing letters to. I wrote a few letters to dead people. Didn't write letters to anybody else. Didn't go looking for anybody else. That's not what I was told to do, and that's not what my next sponsor told me to do when I got my next sponsor. So I don't know where the philosophy came that we write everything. I don't believe in that philosophy today, and I'm still here and I'm still clean, and it really doesn't matter how other people work it. I'm not the only sponsor in the world. I sponsor people who want to work, who want what I have to offer if I have something they see. So we do it the way that works for me. If you want to do it another way, go find somebody else to sponsor you. That's what I was told. I mean, in the people that I asked to be my sponsor, I want what they had to offer. My first sponsor, I didn't ask. He told me, so I appreciated that because I would have never asked anybody. My second sponsor, I did. I understood by that point what it meant to have a sponsor. Because my first sponsor died from this disease. And just couldn't make it. Don't know why. He brought a message to me that has kept me clean. I still hear his voice. I can still see his face. I know that after he died, he still watches out for me. He was instrumental in helping me that first 18 months. Like I said, I found my first NA meeting at a year clean. I was in Florida, where I am today. I came down here for the holidays. I went to the meetings that were available that I knew about. And there were all kinds of meetings that were available. My grandparents lived in Clearwater, two blocks from where I grew up. I used down here a number of times. I had moved away before, I mean, as I started using, we moved. But I used down here with people that I knew when I'd come down and visit my grandparents. I mean, that was just, I mean, I used. As much as I could, as often as I could, and when I did, I was a youngster. Like I said, I got clean before my 21st birthday. When I walked into the rooms down here and picked up my year medallion, it was really interesting because everybody was gray hair. Most people were gray haired. If you know, and the thing about Florida. And my parents used to make this joke, and it's not so much a joke. It's newlywed and nearly dead. This is a retirement state. People come down here because, for the most part, it's for them. There is no income tax, state income tax. So the state's not trying to take your money, at least income tax-wise. And living used to be cheap. I don't think it's cheap any place anymore. There were some young people that I met. I went to meetings every day because I knew that's what I needed to do. And one night somebody told me, it was a Friday night, I remember that, said there's a meeting down the street for drug addicts did I want to go? We were sitting in the meeting, the 8 o'clock meeting at a clubhouse. And I said, I'm meeting for drug addicts. Ooh, yes, I want to go. Because I was a drug addict. I didn't walk into the treatment center as somebody with a problem. I didn't think alcohol was a problem. I mean, alcohol was just something else to use. The reality of it is I used, the drinking age was 18 when I turned 18, but I had been using, drinking alcohol for a long time, because I started using, I was ripping alcohol off when I was five, drinking when my parents had parties. I mean, that's when I started using. And I was off to the races from Jump Street. I mean, and I found everything else. Didn't take me long to find everything else. And it didn't take me long to get into all kinds of things. Like, when I went to that meeting, I looked at, there was a white book on the table, a couple of them. I took two home. I kept one, I left one with somebody up in Vermont because I knew I was moving back here. I gave some people, I said, I went to this meeting, you got to check this out, look at this book. This is neat. When I read Who's an Addict, I knew that this was different. Because I was told in treatment, every time you hear alcohol, change it to drugs. Every time you hear this, think that. And for the first time in my recovery, I didn't have to do that anymore. We didn't have a basic text. They were working on it. I didn't know that at that point. I knew about it shortly after, but I didn't know about it then. They had some pamphlets. The basic text came out for review and input. I took it home from one of the groups that I was involved with. Borrowed it, said, I'm going to borrow it. I'll bring it back. And nobody said anything. I borrowed it, took it to work, copied it, put it in protective pages, put it in a binder, put the book back together, spent 8 hours of a workday doing that. Thank you very much for the company I was working for. I did my work that day, but I was the computer guy in the company, and they didn't say anything about it. And I had my basic text. And I read it inside out. And I didn't take it to meetings because I didn't want to get it messed up, but I started, I mean, the literature is what, that book changed the direction of my meetings because I was still going to both fellowships. And I picked up a 2-year medallion in the other fellowship, and that was the last one I picked up. I've never been back. I made a decision after 2 years. We had a book. Even though it wasn't voted on yet, we had a book. And it didn't matter if it wasn't approved. We had a book. When did you, any of us have to have approval to do anything? We had a book. And I made a decision that I wasn't coming or going back to those meetings. I didn't fit. They didn't want me there anyway because I talked about prescription drugs. And a lot of the old folk at that point were not drinking their alcohol, and they were using Valium to go to sleep at night.
And they didn't like me talking about prescriptions and the fact that I was hitting doctors and blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay. So they didn't really want me there anyway, and I left. And again, I never turned back. Never had a reason to go back. Very grateful that they were there to get me here. Very grateful that the people that put up with me for 2 years, because I was probably pretty obnoxious at points. Thought I knew everything I needed to know. Went to NA, got involved in NA, in service. Everybody did. If you weren't involved, you weren't in the program. We started meeting. We started areas. We started a region. I was up to my eyeballs. I lived Narcotics Anonymous. I had a sponsor who was involved in Narcotics Anonymous. I worked steps. I went to conventions around the country because I could. I was a kid. I did what anybody would do. I buried myself in NA. NA was my life for the first 10 years of my recovery. I ate, slept, drank. If I wasn't at work, if I wasn't at school, I was doing NA service or going to NA meetings, going to conventions. Things shifted. I started to see the politics that are that can be the service structure of Narcotics Anonymous, and the fact that we can eat our own, and the fact that we have, over the course of time, eaten our own. Oh, you're done. Why don't you go retire? Do what you need to do. We don't want you anymore. Have a nice day. Locking people out of offices. Forcing people to resign from positions. And that happened to me at 10 years gone. It was probably the best thing that could have happened in the end, because I learned that the fellowship isn't here to hinder me in my life. The fellowship is here to teach me how to live outside the fellowship in society at large. And I learned to do that. Was I still involved in Narcotics Anonymous? Yes. Every place I went, because I went on the road. After that happened, I went on the road. I had actually gone on the road before that, but I was no longer tied to Florida and the structure that was here. I went on the road. I got to participate all over the United States in different areas of Narcotics Anonymous as a member. And something that's very interesting, I got to watch the time. I got about 5 minutes, maybe. Something that very interesting about my journey, I have been an old timer since the day I walked in to Narcotics Anonymous. Not that I had any wisdom at a year clean, or maybe at 5 years clean, or maybe even at 10 years clean, but I had more clean time than 99% of the people wherever I went. I only hit my, as I said, my first sponsor only had 6 months more than I did. My second sponsor, who I had for 36 years, 35, yeah, 35, 36, only had 6 months more clean time than I did. He got clean July 4th. And I got clean December 30th. Like, okay. But he had what I wanted. And it really didn't matter. He had more clean time than I did. And he had, I mean, that's what it's about. You have, he had what I wanted. And he helped me out a long time, and I hopefully I helped him out the last part of his journey, because he died a number of years ago. And I've been involved in this fellowship for the most part the whole time I've been in, been clean, except for a couple of times. And again, my higher power has interceded when I was off the deep end, because I stopped going to meetings at one point. I think everybody does. I thought it was a rare thing. It's not, I don't think it is. I've heard a lot of people, oh, I stopped going. I've been to enough meetings. My problem was is I made a convention my home group and missed my home group. Still talked to a few people, but didn't go to meetings anymore. Didn't talk to, I mean, that handful of people were people that I had known forever in this program. I remember going to a convention and somebody that where I had been for a couple of years in another state, I was at a Florida convention, and he walked up to me when I was in the meeting and said, we heard you were dead. I'm not today. I'm seen on a regular basis today because I understand that going to meetings on a regular basis will keep me clean. Life has shifted over the course of my recovery. I know today, I haven't missed a meeting in 12 years plus. Been to a meeting every day. Have gone through things in my recovery that I said would take me back out the door, and I'm still here today. The death of my mom. I'm out. I mean, I said that earlier in my recovery in my head. I'm out. When my parents are gone, I can use again. Didn't even think about it. Had been back at meetings for a hot 5 days. But it was like I never left. Right back into it. I get up in the morning, I ask for help with my disease. I believe recovery is a just for today thing. We get to stay clean today. So on a daily basis, I ask for help with my disease. On a daily basis, I ask my higher power to allow me to be the best human being I can be. Am I always the best human being I can be? No. I can still be quite the asshole. I mean, that's what I work on today. I live in 6 and 7. My defects of character, my shortcomings. That's where I live. Some days are better than others, but that's where I live. I also go to a meeting pretty quickly after I get up and get going, because I can. And I've been able to do that since coming online. Couldn't do that when I was doing physical meetings, but coming online, I get up and I go to Australia to their 9 o'clock meeting. They were at different times. We got a meeting every night. When I found Higna and they told me about NA at home, we started more meetings once again. Then we got a meeting every day. Then we had 2 meetings every day, and then we had 3 meetings every day. And one of the meetings was at 5 o'clock in the morning for me. I was like, okay, I get up at 4 o'clock anyway, so I can go to a meeting at five. And then I can do some work and I can go to another meeting at eight. And I can do some work. And if I go to a meeting, if I wanted to go to, I mean, I can go to another meeting. And the pandemic happened and everybody else found out what I already knew. And I got to meet a lot more people, and a lot more people got to experience the things I had been experiencing. And it wasn't because of the service structure. It wasn't because the people that were involved in the service structure did anything. The fellowship did it. The members, the people that were here before the pandemic online, helped other people have what we had and showed them the ropes on whatever platform you wanted to be on. It didn't matter. It was a meeting. I remember going to meetings at the beginning of the pandemic that were 500 or 600 people. That leveled out after a couple of months because that isn't a meeting as far as I'm concerned. We were 100 people in a lot of the meetings. And that leveled out back to where it was supposed to be. I mean, I don't like big meetings. That's me. 20 people, 25 people, yeah. Anything bigger than that, why? Start another meeting. You're not getting anything if the meeting's that large. Well, that's, I guess that's on a whole nother story, whole nother time. I know that the fellowship has changed over the course of time. A big change in the fellowship was when the basic text came out. The fellowship exploded. The other books, not so much. We need the other literature, but not as much as when the basic text came out. The other explosion was the pandemic, when the fellowship came online and joined us. And everybody got to experience what Narcotics Anonymous is and can be, and sitting in rooms with people from all over the globe and not being restricted to a local fellowship. And finding out that addiction is the same no matter where you go. And recovery is the same no matter where you go. We still work the steps. We still read the literature. It's just bigger and broader. And it's what the people that were involved in this fellowship in the beginning wanted. That was their dream, that we could sit down and have these kind of meetings on a regular basis. And it's happening. So thank you for allowing me to share. Thank you all for being here. Have a great day, a great afternoon, a great evening. Back to you, Steve.